Good morning, everyone. We are preparing for the holiday of Hanukkah, which is upon us in less than 2 weeks. And I was asked to speak about the topic, which I'm sure is close to everyone in this room, women and Hanukkah lighting. And we have a general principle that women are exempt from mitzvahs asei shazman gerama, from time-dependent positive commandments. That's a general principle. However, this principle has exceptions. And in source number one, we see the exception which is relevant to this morning's discussion. The Gemara teaches that hadlaka osa mitzvah, that the mitzvah is the kindling of the light itself, and therefore a chere shota v'katan, one who lacks what we call das, halachic ability to think properly, lo osa v'lo klum, that candle is not a candle. But isha vaday madlika, a woman certainly can light the candle, and by lighting the candle, each and every member of her household fulfills the mitzvah. How do we know? Because Rabbi Shua ben Levi taught us, Noshim chayovos b'ner Chanukah, she'af hein hoyu ba'oso hanes. Women are obligated in the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah because they too were involved in the miracle of Chanukah. There's a dispute. Whenever this phrase is found, it's found three times in the Talmud with respect to Chanukah. Who else knows where else it's found? Anybody? This phrase, yes? Purim. One more time. That's correct. Four cups of wine. It's found three times. And each time is a dispute. What does it mean? Af hein hayavosanes. Even they. Some say means even they, because they too were saved along with the rest of their brothers and sisters from the various tribulations of the story of Egypt and the story of Purim and Shushan and the story of Chanukah. But some say it means they took a lead role in these respective salvations. The story of Esther, of course, with respect to Purim. The righteous women that the Talmud speaks about with respect to Pesach. And Yehudis, the famous story of Yehudis, for which reason we eat milchiks on Chanukah in respect to Chanukah. That's not our topic for this morning. But whatever the case may be, women have a special role in these three mitzvahs, Apein Hoyo Ba'oso Anes. It's interesting that despite the fact that this seems to be a complete identity between between men and women in this respect, it's not quite the case. We'll skip to note number three. The Mishnah Berurah says, look in Tshuva Ola Shmuel, that now we all light every person in the household. Isha eino tzricha lahadlik. You know, all the men in the house light, women not. Why? Tahavyan rak tfelos la'anosha. This doesn't sound very good in this room. That the women are considered somehow secondary to the men. Whoa. We have to really explain. What does that mean? We don't understand what's going on. Vimrotzim lahadlik mevarchos. They want to make a bracha, it's fine. Why? Tahavi kishar mitzvah asei shazman gerama diyecholos levarach. Just as a woman, for us, Ashkenazi women, we make bracha on lulav and a bracha on sukkah, even though we're technically speaking exempt, so too with respect to Chanukah. This is mind-boggling. We just saw in the Talmud that the principle of Zman Gerama, at first glance, does not apply to Ner Chanukah, because there's an override. What's the override? Af hein hayu ba'oso hanes. That overrides, presumably, the principle of Zman Gerama. Why then does the Mishnah Berurah continue to talk about Zman Gerama in the context of Ner Chanukah? Is the question clear? It should be a very clear question. The Talmud says that women have a role in Ner Chanukah despite the fact that it's Zman Gerama, for the overriding reason of Af hein hayu ba'oso hanes, found here in Chanukah as well as in the Purim and Arba Kosos. Yet the Mishnah Berurah continues in his analysis of whether she's permitted to make a bracha in basing himself on Zman Gerama. Are there any Sephardi women in this room? Because Sephardic women have a different custom. They do not make a bracha on lulav and do not make a bracha on sukkah. And according to this Mishnah Berurah, you get an impression they would not make a bracha on Chanukah either, which is so hard to understand. The top line said that Isha Vaday Madlika, Afein Hoya Boso Anes, which seems to override the idea of Zman Grama? This is our fundamental question for this morning. Is the question clear? Let us try to analyze a possible answer for this question. Remarkably, this lack of parity seems to exist not only with respect to the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah, but extends to Megillah as well. If one looks in source number 4, I see that source number 4 was truncated. I apologize. The first part of source number 4 teaches us that a woman should not read the Megillah for a man because the woman is obligated in Shmiya and the man in Kriya. Also requires explanation. A woman is required to hear the Megillah and a man is required to read the Megillah. And to demonstrate this, the Ramah goes on, V'yesh Omrim, number 4, Im Isha Koro La'atzma V'oreches Lishmoa Megillah She'ena Chayevitz B'Kriya. A man makes Al-Mikra Megillah, woman makes Lishmoa Megillah. Again, why the disparity? And source number 5, why is it that a woman should not read the Megillah for a man? Says the Mishnah Berurah number 5, To Evsha De'isha Ena Chayevitz B'Kriya Rak Lishmoa U'Mikri She'ena M'Chayevitz B'Dava L'Gabay Ish. So therefore, since you require for A to discharge B's obligation, A and B have to be on the same level of obligation. Here, A, the woman is only obligated to hear the Megillah, and B, the man is obligated to read the Megillah, so it's not on par, therefore she cannot read the Megillah of him. Once again, we don't understand what's the difference between hearing the Megillah and reading the Megillah. If Afe and Hoya Boso Anes, the two should be identical. Are these questions clear? We had a similar questions by Chanukah, and similar questions by Megillah. Okay, so let's analyze now for a moment what we have to discuss. This equation between Ner Chanukah and Megillah is not mine. Goes back a long way to source number 6. Source number 6, the Rav Yoh, who was an early Rishon, says women are obligated to read the Megillah, pirish the Shmoa, to hear the Megillah. And the Halachas Gedolah says the Mishma Megillah, to hear the Megillah. Okay? Fine. So the Rav Yoh, on the end of the third line, wonders. We learn in Isha Vare Madlaka, she can light the menorah, with Noshim Chayavis B'ner Chanukah, so Badakti B'halochas Gedolos Lo Pirish Bamidi. I don't know if the same principle of the Baal Halochas Gedolos, of the disparity between men and women, which he expressed in the context of Megillah, would apply or not in the context of Chanukah. And yes, guess what? The last 5 words. V'chein noshim chayavas b'arba kosos. Maybe there too is a disparity. So it's not just my wonder, it's the Rav Yoh, who did it a long time ago, who is wondering about it himself. So let's analyze for a moment. What does it mean, hearing the Megillah, reading the Megillah? To us, it's a bunch of words. It's not exactly the same thing. Why should we assume that a woman is only obligated in hearing and a man is obligated in reading? At first glance, it makes absolutely no sense. Let me suggest my understanding. There is a concept called Pirsume Nisa. I'm sure you've heard of it, the concept of Pirsume Nisa, to publicize the miracle. Publicizing the miracle is directly connected to the phrase which is our main topic for today, Sha'af Hein Hoyu, but also Ha Nes. Pirsume Nisa, Hoyu, but also Ha Nes. And let me ask you a question. What bracha do we make, which is limited, is unique, to mitzvahs of Pirsume Nisa? Has the same word in it. Say it louder. Sha'asa Nisin. Sha'asa Nisin, we say on two, a whole year, only say it twice. Which two mitzvahs do we say Sha'asa Nisin? Come on. Chanukah and Megillah. That's it. So you have the word Nes 3 times. Afein Hayav also a Nes. Pirsume Nisa, the Gemara is an expression. And Sha'asa Nisin Lavoseinu. Obviously these 3 mentions of the same word Nes teach us that these 3 mitzvahs have a special role. Special mitzvah Pirsume Nisa. And Pirsume Nisa means to publicize to the whole world as much as we can that this is a miracle transpired. When we speak of publicity, we have to understand we're talking to a general population. We don't limit ourselves to a population such as the ones who are coming to this year this morning. We'll call a population of scholars. Population of scholars is a limited population. When we have Pirsum Anisa, we require publicity to the entire Jewish population, even those who are not yet scholars, who don't appreciate the subtleties and nuances of the halachic system. Even they have to know what's happening. So I'll ask you a question. If you go to shul on Purim and you hear the Megillah being read, tell me, how do you discharge the obligation? How does anybody discharge the obligation? Sitting in the back. How do you discharge your obligation? You'll ask the average citizen and they'll tell you, what do you mean, how do I? I heard the Balkori read the Megillah. Everyone understands that. Even a scholar in this room understands it. And someone who's not yet a scholar, who's not in this room, also understands that if a woman is in the back of shul, or if a man, for that matter, is in the back of shul, and hears the Megillah, thereby they discharge your obligation. Correct? But in this audience of scholars, is there anybody who knows an additional nuance, an additional dimension of how any person in the back who hears the Megillah discharges his or her obligation in the Megillah? Anybody know what I'm talking about? Amen. Very good. What else? Read along. Some people, what's he say? They are the scholars. Shomea ke'one, a scholarly concept found in the Talmud once or twice. Someone who hears is considered as someone who says. This is a very deep halachic concept with many details, but most people don't know about it. Most people, you'll ask them, how did you fulfill the obligation of the Megillah? They'll say, I heard the Balkori, good enough. The scholar will tell you, oh no, I heard the Balkori, and by listening to the Balkori, it's as if I read it myself. Hearing is very public. Everyone knows you heard it. Saying is the province of scholars. Only the scholars know that whoever sits in shul is as if he or she is reading the Megillah himself or herself by virtue of Shomea Ka'on. It seems to me, therefore, that women in these three mitzvahs are obligated precisely because of Pirsum Anisa. But their obligation, and here's my main thesis for this morning, their obligation is limited to what I will call the Pirsume Nisa aspect of these mitzvahs. Hence the disparity. Men are obligated in the mitzvah itself. Women who are exempt from Zman Gerama, from time-dependent positive commandments, are nonetheless obligated in the, quote, Pirsume Nisa aspect of these mitzvahs. Now, what is the Pirsume Nisa aspect of a mitzvah? The famous one that everybody knows and realizes and can understand. What's famous with respect to the Megillah? That everybody is listening, is hearing as the Megillah is being read. What's not so famous about the Megillah? That everybody in shul is considered as if he or she is reading it through Shomea Ka'one. So therefore, when the rabbis obligated the women in the Pirsume Nisa aspect, the Baal Halachos Gedolos calls that Shmiya, because Shmiya is Mefursam, it's famous. Kriya, the core mitzvah, which is not so famous to everyone in the back of the shul is as if they're reading, this women are exempt from because it is a mitzvah asei shazman grama. Is that clear? This is my understanding of this opinion, which maintains that a woman should not read for a man once again because she is obligated in Shmiya and he is in Kriya. The answer being, Shmiya is the famous. Everyone knows about it. It's Pirsume Nisa. Kriya is only scholars know about through Shomea Ka'one, and therefore women are exempt because it's a Zman Gerava. This is the fundamental principle for this morning Shia. Okay? But we say, that's Purim. We're talking about Hanukkah. We're mixing it up. That's how halachic analysis goes. We have to start from far, right? And we come close. Well, you know about that. Mimerachak Tovi Lachma. This is the Eish Yischayah. We start from far. Hoysa Kaniyo Socher, on a faraway boat, cruise, and you bring in the bread, okay? So now let's bring in the bread and analyze Hanukkah against the backdrop of Purim. So, what is the nature of the mitzvah of Hanukkah? We all know the mitzvah of Hanukkah is Ner Ish Ubeisa. Ner ish ubeisa. Every household must have a candle lit on Hanukkah. Has to be. Has to be. Strictly speaking, it's sufficient to have one candle in the entire house. Doesn't matter what night it is. Doesn't matter how many people live there. One candle suffices. Yes, we're all aware of what we call Mahadrin. And, what's it called? Mahadrin. Mina Mahadrin. Oh, that's wonderful. But the core mitzvah is Ner Ish Ubeisa. One candle in the entire household. And you may ask, if that's the case, ask the average person. How is it? The family comes together, one person lights, there could be six people living in the house, and somehow all six people have fulfilled the obligation of Hanukkah when only one person is lighting. So once again, how so? The other people didn't light. So the scholar will say, and now by now everyone in this room is already a scholar, what do you mean? Mitzvah's Hanukkah, ner ish ubeso. As long as any one of the six members of the household lit the candle, all six discharge the obligation, which is fundamentally an obligation on the home. So one candle per home will suffice. That's what the scholar says. However, not everybody's a scholar. What do they realize? When everyone gathers around the table, and the individual is lights the ner, in effect, for the entire house, what does everybody else do? Say amen. What else? What do? They watch. Excellent. They see as the candles are lit. Excellent. This watching, to my mind, is the halachic equivalent of the what? Of the shmiyah. Maybe different senses. When it comes to the Megillah, what's the first and what's what does everybody realize? That you're hearing the Megillah. When it comes to Hanukkah, what does everybody realize? That you are seeing the candles. Therefore, I would like to suggest that the Pirsume Nisa aspect of Ner Hanukkah is what? Seeing. Just as the Pirsume Nisa aspect of the Megillah is hearing. Yes? Very good question. Excellent. We make two brachas on Hanukkah. The first is Lahadlik. That's the core mitzvah. The core mitzvah of Lahadlik, I'm suggesting, women are exempt from. Because they are, it's Zman Geroma. But, women are obligated in the Pirsume Nisa aspect, which in this context means they're obligated to do what? To see the Neros. Just as you're obligated to hear the Megillah. Yes? What is what? Right. So if a Cheresh, Shota, or Katan, these individuals who don't have sufficient intelligence, light a candle, that candle is nothing. He doesn't hear and doesn't speak. And in Talmudic times, if you couldn't hear or speak, you couldn't communicate, you lack sufficient intelligence. Today, it's an excellent question. Not for today. Today means in the modern times. I can't discuss it. It will take us the whole hour to discuss what's the halakhic status today of someone who can neither hear nor speak, but they're taught and they communicate, maybe different completely. But that's not for now. But in the Talmudic times, he couldn't communicate, he couldn't understand, the same as someone who was, unfortunately, a shota, was deranged, or a katan was too young. So, that was different. But a woman, her candle is a candle, and if she lights it, it counts for all the members of the household. Why? Why is her candle meaningful? She is obligated what we'll call, in our language, re'iyah. And the Talmud teaches us that if someone cannot light candles, can't, they have no candles, all they do is see someone else's candles, they make a bracha. Guess which bracha they make? Sha'asa nisim. Excellent. Sha'asa nisim. Because that's exactly the bracha of Pirsume Nisa, to see the candles. So it fits in perfectly with this thesis. Of course, yes. We'll come to that. We'll come. Excellent. But there's only one, before we go further to your question, which is an excellent question, we have to first analyze a very basic concept, which so far, if we don't articulate it, leaves my analysis as being self-contradictory. Let's explain this, the contradiction. I'd like you to figure it out, but I'll just give you the facts. We said that a woman cannot read the Megillah for a man, according to the Vahag's opinion. Why? Because she's obligated in Shmiah only, and he's obligated even in what? Even in Kriya. Good. There's a question. So we have a lot of scholars here. The question now becomes, if you follow the analogy to its logical extension, what should emerge is, the woman cannot light the candle for a man. But that's not true. A woman clearly can. That's the source number one. Isha varei madlika. As opposed to chere shoda v'katan, who cannot discharge all the members of the household, a woman clearly can. And the question is, why is that so? Okay, excellent question. That's a great question. Why does the analogy break down when it comes to whether the woman could do it for a man? Purim not, and Chanukah yes. So the answer, I believe, is found in source number two. In source number two, Isha madlekas ner Chanukah, shafi chayeves ba, cheres shel dekatan is nothing. V'yesh misha omer, the second line, v'katan shigia lechinuch mutter. Some say that once the child is already almost bar mitzvah, and is able to be, is educable, then his or her candle would suffice for the entire household. Says source number three, in the second part of source number three, says the Mishnah Berurah, the Mechaber, the Shulchan Aruch, in Tarpat, in Laws of Megillah, Mashma de Lamasa, in practicality, Ein Lismel Shiyia HaKoton Yochol Lehotzi Badlokoso Legdolim. What does that mean? When it comes to the Megillah, the Shulchan Aruch said, under 13, no. So the Mishnah Berurah is making an analogy. Comes to Ner Chanukah, under 13, no. The problem with that analogy is that the Shulchan Aruch disagrees. Shulchan Aruch here quotes two views on the matter in source number two. When it comes to the Megillah, he quotes only one view on the matter. Namely, you have to be bar mitzvah. So we have another problem. How do we reconcile the opinion of the Shulchan Aruch from the laws of Chanukah to the laws of Megillah? So my Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik gave a very interesting answer to this question. And he explained that when it comes to a personal obligation that's obligatory upon each and every individual as a person, in order for someone to discharge the obligation for me, that individual has to be over 13, a bar mitzvah, over 12, bas mitzvah. Has to be. Someone who's under 12 or 13 cannot discharge my obligation because I'm obligated and he or she are not obligated. That's only true for a completely personal obligation. However, when it comes to a household obligation, ner ishu beso, such as ner Chanukah, there we say that as long as the ner has halachic significance and meaning, it suffices, even though the person who lit that candle may not have a full personal obligation. Hence, at least according to one opinion, an 11-year-old child who's a gia lechinuch, and they lit a candle on Chanukah, it has meaning, it has significance, and as a result, all the members of the household, even if they're 50 years old, can discharge your obligation thereby. It's not a personal obligation, it's only a what? A household obligation. Ah. This being the case, we come to answer your question. Your question was a great question. If the analogy holds, the same way as a woman should not be able to read the Megillah for a man, because her obligation is only Shmiah, and his is Kriya, so too, the woman shouldn't be able to light for the man, because her obligation is Re'iyah, and his obligation is Hadlaka. The answer is no. It's an obligation on the household. As long as the lighting of the candle is meaningful, all members of the house discharge their obligation. When it comes to the woman, her candle lighting is meaningful. She has an obligation to see the candles. There's no other candles around. De facto, she has to light the candle in order to see it. So therefore, it's a meaningful lighting, and therefore all the people of the household can fulfill their obligations through her lighting. Okay? So we've completed now the first half of today's shiur. I'll take any questions before we proceed to the second half. Yes? Okay. What does meaningful mean? It means halachically meaningful. Let's say somebody, a 3-year-old kid will light a candle. Or someone who is unfortunately deranged or has no intelligence lights a candle. But that has no meaning. It would be as if it's lit by itself. Let's say someone who's not even Jewish lights the candle. So the light is there, but lacks halachic significance. It has to be lit by someone who relates to the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah. So a woman, the Talmud teaches us on the first line, Isha Vare Madlika, because since Afen Hoya but also Anes, she's obligated in the Pesum and Nisa aspect, so she relates to this mitzvah. It's halachically significant and meaningful. As opposed to someone who does not relate, it's not meaningful, it cannot discharge the obligations to the members of the household. Yes, ma'am. If they don't know the ta'amim, first of all, today they know the ta'amim. And secondly, as long as they know the words, even without the ta'amim, they can fulfill the obligation. As long as, yes. But you remind me of one thing I didn't discuss. What about Pesach? I mean, it's a long time till Pesach. I don't want to give anybody any get nervous about preparing for Pesach right now. But just to fill in the last member of this threesome, there's a big fight in the poskim. Are women obligated to say the Haggadah Pesach night? Some say yes, some say no. And the question is raised, how could you possibly say no? We know for a fact that women are obligated in what? 4 cups of wine. What are the 4 cups of wine recited over? We all know. Kiddush, Haggadah, benching, and Hallel. So how is it conceivable that some Gedolim teach us the women are exempt from the mitzvah of Haggadah? It's impossible. They're obligated in the 4 cups of wine. The answer is, of course, based on analysis, but guess what? You guessed it. The same as when it comes to Hanukkah, and the same when it comes to Megillah, so too when it comes to the 4 cups of wine, there are 2 dimensions. We are always 2-dimensional. Correct. There's the drinking of the wine, and there's the recitations over the wine. The drinking of the wine, that's the Pesum Anisa aspect. That demonstrates, I can guzzle down 4 cups of wine. Ho-ho, I'm a free person. So, the Gemara tells us, according to the Rambam's text, that if one guzzles down 4 cups of wine, yidecherus yotza, you show that you're a free person. Arbakosos, the core mitzvah, lo yotza. So there too, a woman's only obligated in the Pesum Anisa aspect of the cherus, of the publicizing the miracle, but she's not necessarily obligated in the core mitzvah, which is linking these 4 cups to the 4 recitations. So therefore, even if she's exempt from the recitation of the Haggadah, she's still obligated in the Pesum Anisa aspect, namely the drinking of the 4 cups of wine. So that we just filled out the third of the 3. Yes? Very good question. The answer is, there is no personal obligation of hadlaka. The obligation of hadlaka is on the household. And if it's only on the household, her candle, which is meaningful, satisfies his obligation as well. Okay? Any other questions before we proceed? Yes? Very good question. So that's the second part of today's shiur. What is beso? Very good. What is beso? Ner ish ubeso, the house. What do they mean, the house? What does the house mean? What is the house? Okay, so let's try to analyze this from a number of different perspectives. Number one, although it's not our topic for today, I want to emphasize to everybody in the room that the obligation of Ner Chanukah can only be fulfilled in one's home. You cannot light in the street. You cannot light in shul. You cannot light at a wedding. And you cannot light in someone else's house either. You can only light in your own house. Slowly. You pay through the nose, that's your house. So, yes? Ah, very good. You go away for Shabbos. What happens then? Since you sleep there that night, it's considered to some extent to be your house. It's not totally your house, you don't live there, you're only a guest, but to some extent it's your house. As a matter of fact, we have a principle that someone who's a guest in someone else's house, go back to source number one, a guest. What do we call a guest? An achsanai. He could be a guest in a hotel. Achsanai used to be called an inn. He could be a guest in someone else's house, your parents' house, your children's house, your friend's house. You're a guest. Says the Talmud, Chaya b'ner Chanukah. You have an obligation of Ner Chanukah in the home of your host. And the, how do you do it? So the Gemara explains. A great story of Rav Zeira. Originally, when I was in my Rebbe's house in the yeshiva, Mishtatafna bepriti b'hadeyushpiza. I'd give a penny. By giving a penny to the innkeeper, I would have my part in his mitzvah. Basa de nesivi itasa. Once I got married, aha, pays to get married. I said to myself, Hashta vada lo tirichna. I no longer need to give a penny to my host. The komadlikli alai bego besoy. Because they are lighting for me in my house. My wife is lighting for me. It's no longer an obligation for me to give a penny to the innkeeper. A remarkable Gemara on many, many scores. On many scores. Now, what's quite remarkable is the idea of how this translates into Lahalacha. Let's go to source number 7. Yesh Omri, some say, Sh'afal pisha madlikin ola besoch beso, and say his wife lights for him at home, he's far away, imu b'mokom sh'ein bo Yisrael madlik b'brochus. Can you imagine this? You can light again. That's a big problem. How do you light again? You already fulfilled your obligation at home when your wife lit for you. Answers, explains the Ramah, ki chayav liros haneros. There's an obligation to see the candles. Your wife lit 100 miles away, and you didn't see those candles, you saw no candles, so you required, in effect, to light the candles in order to be able to see him. V'chein noagin. V'afilu im eitzal Yehudim v'ro haneros. There were many other candles. You were in a different Jewish community. You don't see? Source number 7. Even if you are near other Jews who've lit the candles, im rotze lahachmir al atzmo ulahadik b'fnei atzmo, you want to be strict with yourself and light on your own, even though your wife already lit for you at home, madlik umavarech aleya, you may light again and make a bracha. We're not worried about a bracha levatola. And there are more adds, v'chein noagin. And this is our custom. Whoa. This is our custom. Whoa. That's a very, very major novel opinion. Because we have a general principle that if one already discharged an obligation and now wants to go beyond, you can't make a bracha on that. You already fulfilled the mitzvah. You can't just say, is there a person, I don't know, took a lulav and they already made a bracha, discharged their obligation, they held the lulav. They want to hold it again. They already ate matzah. They want to eat more matzah. Very nice, you have mitzvah points. But you can't make a bracha on that. You already fulfilled your basic obligation. Take a look at source number 9. Source number 9 is not so clear. It starts with the words v'chein noagin, which are the last two words we saw. V'chein sas v'har b'yachor. Many people say it that way. V'yesh min ha'poskim she'sovim. No! It's wrong. Since Chazal exempt you out through adlokas ishto, lo kol kamine. It's not within your power. Lomar eini rotzel lotes b'shel ishti. You cannot say that. We believe in equality. Just as if a man lights the nair, the woman fulfills her obligation, so too if the woman lights the nair, the man fulfills his obligation. You want to light again? Be my guest. But, v'yadlik below bracha. Whoa. Don't you dare make a bracha if you're away from home and your wife already lit. And don't tell me you're going to be a smart aleck and say, I don't want to fulfill my obligation through my wife. I want to do it myself. It doesn't work. It doesn't work. So what do? So, I'm speaking from personal experience. It happened to me. I was far away from home on Hanukkah, and my wife lit in the house. And now what do? I try to follow what the Mishnah Berurah said on line 3. What did I do? Lahader lishmoa habrochos mipi acher. The place where I was staying, the Baal HaBayis lit his menorah. V'yana ome. And I answered ome to the Baal HaBayis' bracha lahadik neir shulchanukah, v'yichav and lotzit ben with that bracha, v'yadlik neir osav, and then I lit my candles, I didn't make a bracha, because according to the Mishnah Berurah, according to one opinion, it would be a bracha lebatala. Can't take any chances. I heard the bracha of my host, answered amen, and then lit. That's what it says. The only other alternative is to be a wise guy and to light before your wife. Beat her to the punch. Of course, that depends where you are. My story, I was in California. No way I could beat her to the punch. She was 3 hours in by the time I got a chance to move. Had I been maybe in Eretz Yisrael, that might have worked. But in any event, this is what it says. So the core mitzvah is fulfilled in the house. The person who's away from home, on the road, that's not the right place. You're only in a achsanoi. That won't help to discharge the obligation for all the members of the household. I tell my students to go to Israel. They want to know, must I light Ner Chanukah or can I fulfill my mitzvah when my parents light for me in their house? I answer them. In my view, if your parents light in the house, you will fulfill your mitzvah in Yerushalayim. Even though it's thousands of miles away, even though it's a different time, it doesn't make a difference. That's my opinion. But if your parents tell you they're going away for Shabbos, you have a problem because they're not lighting in the house. So you may be considered a member of the household, but not of the household where they're staying for Shabbos. So it could be different. There's a lot of nuances over here, but there are many hands up. So before I proceed, I'll answer some questions. Yes. Louder, louder. Very good question. Can this husband who's far away make a bracha of she'osa nisim la'voseinu on the sighting, on the seeing of the candles? The simple interpretation is yes, but there's a longer discussion which is not for now. Yes. Very good question. What happens? We're discussing cases where the husband or the wife, one of them is far away from home. What if they're both at home? What happens then? That's your question. They're both home. I'm saying home means they're both in town. Okay. They're both in town. Then what happens? Here's the answer. My answer. If they're both in town, my view is that whoever is there first should wait for the spouse who comes in second. I don't care how many hours it takes. They should light together. A family, what they say, light together? We won't say fight together, that we won't say that. A family that lights together won't fight together. For Shalom Bayis, I'll tell you a story of the Chofetz Chaim. The Chofetz Chaim wrote in the Sefer Mishneh Berurah, it's very important to light as quickly as you possibly can. As soon as you can. Somebody passed by his house way after this man, and it was dark. The candles were not lit yet. He said, Rebbe, you taught us in Mishneh Berurah, you're supposed to light immediately as soon as it gets dark. Why have you not lit yet? He said, very simple. My wife is out working. She helps support the family. She wants to be there when I light the candles. The Talmud teaches us, if you have enough money for either Ner Chanukah or Ner Shabbos, you light the Ner Shabbos. Do you know why, the Gemara tells us? Shalom Bayis. I will postpone my lighting, no matter what I wrote in Mishneh Berurah, I want to have Shalom Bayis. And that's how we do it in our house. Whoever comes in last, husband and wife, no matter what time it is, could be 8 o'clock at night after work, could be 1 o'clock in the morning after a long night of doing things, we always light together. But one of us lights. That's if we're both in town. I believe it's worthwhile to wait. But you are correct. If one would light first, the second one in wants to light him or herself, in my view, should not be making a bracha. What about eating? That's not a topic for this morning. We're not supposed to eat before we light the Ner Chanukah. But there are ways around that one. If we make some kind of a reminder for ourselves that we have to light, this works. What's the reminder? So now that people have on their watch all kinds of reminders, and there used to be a string around the finger, that's passé. You have your text messages text you at a certain hour. You know better than me the tricks to remind yourself. Yes? That's why another reason to recommend that they wait for each other. Again, if he wants the light, no one's stopping him. If he makes a bracha, it's problematic. Right, that's what we said before. That should be, without going into detail, that should be simple, but it's not as simple as it seems. Yes? Can't. Unless, I don't think so. You should ask them to sleep over. Do you have room for them to sleep in your house? I'm making you problems. I can't volunteer to do the linens. But it's my opinion that the sleeping has determined. Now, yes, louder. Good question, an excellent question. I'll repeat the question. Why am I saying that only one person can light? In her experience, this questioner asks, everybody makes a bracha, not just one person. So what's going on? That's an excellent question. Really an excellent question. So I'll answer your question right now. Even what you've seen is subject to question. Let's go to source number 12. V'da, Aruch HaShulchan. Shereisi le'echad min ha'gdolim shehirish al Rabbeinu ha'ramah v'al ha'minig. Ramah's minig, as we all know, every person in the household lights for himself. Because of David brachas levatolam, everybody's bracha after the first person is levatolam. That's your question. Why? Ramah says kol echad mibnei abayis yad v'chein aminik. Okay, so that's a mistake. It's based upon the Rambam. The Rambam says that only one person lights the number of days times the number of household members. So let's say the first night Chanukah, according to the Rambam, if there are five people in the house, he lights five candles, the next day 10, all the way up to 40, 8 times 5 on the 8th night. That's what the Rambam says. What the Ramah says is a disaster. Last three lines to save time. Aval sheyidlaku shnei anashim b'vayis echad havei bracha levatala v'osur lasos kein. That's your question. The same as I said with respect to a husband and a wife, is the possibility of bracha levatala. It should be true with respect to two, a father and a son, a mother and a daughter, two brothers, whoever's living in the house, the same principle should apply. Is that your question? Excellent question. An excellent question. Let me give my answer. My answer is as follows. Source number 13. Someone already made a bracha of lahadlik, and then an additional candle came. It was the second night Chanukah. Only had one candle. And then he made a bracha lahadlik. And then someone walked in, oh, here's a second candle. And then half an hour later, can you make a bracha on that second candle? Well, it's too late. Says the Rabbi Kiva Eger, Masha Mosif HaNeiros Rak Machmas Hidur Mitzvah. 13, the first line. Let's start the second line. The Lo Shayach Levarech Olav. Can't. Ve'ein lahavi raya d'shayach levarach ala hidur. Don't bring me a proof. Da'anan levarach and kol b'nei beso. Every single child in the house makes a bracha. After midina ner ishu beso. It's enough to have one. Ve'inach b'chlala mahadrin. So how does it work? How does it work that one person and another person and another person, there'll be five children, everyone makes a bracha? How does it work? Says Rabbi Akiva Eger Zeh. No, that's no question. Why? The Shana Hashem is different. Kevan deritzono lios meha mahadrin, since he wants to be one of the mahadrin, kavanoso shelo lotseis bishel ze hamadlik. You have intention not to fulfill the mitzvah when the first person is lighting. Umemela mechuyav midina. And once that happens, the person is obligated by strict law. It's no longer a mahadrin because you did not discharge your obligation with the original lighting. You had in mind not to discharge the obligation. This, of course, is in sync with that Ramah that said you have the ability to say, no, I do not want to fulfill my obligation with the lighting of another. However, as we saw earlier, in footnote number 9, Not everyone agrees with Rabbi Akiva Eger. Some say that doesn't work. No matter what, you discharge your obligation. Of course, the question becomes, why? Why should that be? Generally speaking, we have the ability not to discharge an obligation. Maybe in certain homes, Hasidic homes, everybody makes Kiddush. The Baal HaBayis makes Kiddush, the sons make Kiddush. Why is not a bracha levatala? The answer is in those homes, where he knows he's going to make Kiddush in 2 minutes, he does not fulfill his obligation with the father's Kiddush. So why should this be any different? This is source number 8. Source number 8. In the last 3 lines on the page, he says like this: "Sheyachal omar eini yotze bevirchas ishti, dodas shomeo mashmiya beinon." Even if he's at home, the last 2 lines, "Vein arotz olotzeis bevirchas ishto, eini yodea isur bedavar im yivarech meatzmo." Why can't the husband and the wife both light with a bracha? Why? What's the difference? Right? There's nothing wrong with having intention not to fulfill your obligation with somebody else. You don't understand. This is the question which was raised by the Taz. However, if one looks a little bit higher up, we quote the Rashal, Marashal. It's about the 6th line in this source number 8. Ish v'ishto bevadai maspik lohem ner echot. It's one candle suffices for both. And the 2nd line, if you know your wife is lying in your house, ein lo lahadlik. If you want to, 3rd line, lo yivarech. You're not supposed to make a bracha. Ein lo yochol yivarech. We saw this quote in the Mishnah Berurah in source number 9. And a few lines up, the line begins with the words, bracha levatala. So what's going on over here? Why should you not be able to have intention to not fulfill your obligation? And why should there be a difference, if any, between a husband and wife, which is a team, and everybody else? If you look at source number... I just saw it before. Source number 11. When there are more rights, let's start with source number 10. Remember, source 12 said it's a disaster. It's a bracha levatala. But before we get that far, source number 11 says, levad me ishto dehi kegufo. Who said before? Ishto kegufo. The source is in the Mishnah Berurah. Something very strange. Let me answer you the fundamental point going back to our original analysis. I'll ask you a question. Why is it that so many Gedolei Torah, the Marashal and others, say that it's impossible for somebody to say, I don't want to fulfill my obligation when my, fill in the blank, wife, husband, father, son, brother, lit. Doesn't work. Why shouldn't it work? It works by Kiddush. Why shouldn't it work over here? Who can give me the answer? I'm looking for a volunteer. Who can give me the answer? Why is it that I can say I don't want to fulfill Kiddush with my father's Kiddush, but I cannot say I don't want to fulfill Ner Chanukah with my father's lighting? Yes. You see it? Okay, good, good. A little bit better? Yes? Exactly, that's my answer. Again, there are a lot of scholars here. It's not a personal obligation. If it's a personal obligation, every person can say, I'm only going to do it my way. You can't force me to fulfill a personal obligation because I happen to have heard or seen what someone else is saying or doing. Impossible to say that. But when it comes to a household obligation, as long as I'm a member of the household, I discharge my obligation, like it or not. I give an example. You look in the back of your seat, there's a mezuzah on the door. Can a person say, I don't want to fulfill my obligation with that mezuzah? Can't do that. As long as you live in the house and someone put a mezuzah on the door, all the members of the household fulfill their obligation with that mezuzah. The only way out is to leave the house. And I don't mean temporarily. I will say it later in all problems. Get married! If you get married and leave the house, you no longer fulfill your obligation automatically with your father's Ner Chanukah or your father's mezuzah. You have your own house. But as long as you're living at home and somebody lit a candle, you fulfill the obligation whether you like it or not. So the question becomes again, so how does the father light and then the son's all light? Here's the answer. The answer is, contrary to Rabbi Akiva Eiger, our custom is that you do make a bracha on Mahadrin. You do make a bracha on the additional dimension of Mahadrin. And this is found in many sources, the Rambam included them, if you don't have it in front of you, that even though they already lit on the eighth night, they already lit 7 candles, and they ran short. And then half an hour later, they bring in an 8th candle, you can make a bracha, lahadlik ner shachanik, on that 8th candle. And by the same token, if the father lit already, now the sun lights, it's a mahadrin, you can make a bracha, lahadlik ner shachanik. The only exception is levad me ishto dehika gufo. For reasons we're not completely sure, I could speculate, the Chazal said that a man and a wife are one unit, mitzvah chanukah ner ish ubeso, that's the core of the household, and therefore they are one. There's one candle for a husband and wife. You know, in a different context, where the Torah speaks about beso, on Yom Kippur, the chiper bado v'ad beso, the Kohen Gadol must have a wife. If he has no wife, he cannot serve in that capacity. Doesn't have to have children, but he has to have a wife. So the core definition of beso is man and wife. Yes, on the unfortunate case where a man has no wife and a woman has no husband and they're living by themselves, they still have an obligation to light the candle. That's true. But if the addition of a spouse, a husband or a wife, does not engender an obligation of mahadrin, an additional candle, Chazal were determining that the fundamental definition of beso is the husband-wife team. This, therefore, is the understanding of this opinion in halacha. It's not unanimously accepted. I know that. There are some who say, no matter what, you can have the kavana not to fulfill your obligation. And I can understand that, especially in light of what we said before, the seeing of the candles. The seeing of the candles, we call it, is a personal obligation. You see with your own eyes. So maybe the ability to have this, if you look carefully in the Ramah that we had quoted earlier, the Ramah being in source number seven, just to review it again, that a person, if one wants to, can light himself even after they lit in the house. The Ramah says so and adds, ki chayav liros haneros. He didn't say it back in Sif Aleph where the basic law of Achsanoi was recorded. Because that obligation of the household you fulfill willy-nilly, like it or not. But it's the obligation of seeing, which is a personal one, which according to these understandings, you can say, I don't want to do it. Others say that even that seems to be impossible. As far as the core obligation of lighting is concerned, you can't make a bracha on lighting just in order to see it in this context. And therefore they say that others will do it through the bracha on the mahadrin. This mahadrin is unique, different than a mahadrin of a nicer esrog. I had an esrog, I take a nicer esrog, you don't make a new bracha. But here when it comes to Hanukkah, we have a clearly defined mahadrin. When it comes to a nicer esrog, you think this is nicer, I think that's nicer. Beauty is in the eye of the beholder. When it comes to Hanukkah, it's very, very clearly articulated. What is the mahadrin? A candle for every member of the household, 1 through 8 every night of Hanukkah. These mahadrins are more, if you will, required. You really have to do it. Everyone does it. And therefore, it warrants an independent bracha, according to what we're saying. But the mahadrin was not instituted for a man and a wife, as we saw in the source in the Mishnah Berurah, source number 11, Levad Meishto Dehi Kegufo. Yes? I'll go further than you. They don't have to decide. It's automatic. As soon as one person in the house lights, everyone in the house who lives in that house discharges his or her core obligation. Automatic. They don't have, they can do it. Because of Mahadrin. Doesn't matter what they were thinking at the time. It's irrelevant. Chanukah parties. I love Chanukah parties. Family should get together when the sun is shining. That solves a lot of problems. But if they get together at night, the ideal is they should light the candles at home first. And if you want to blow it out for safety's sake, you may blow it out. You wait, it's supposed to wait a half an hour and then blow it out. Right? And then you go have your party. But if you have to have the party first, you may do so, but you have to have an adequate reminder. Included would be set up the candles first. So you walk into the house, you see right away, hey, what's this doing over here? I have all the candles are set up. Oh, I didn't light yet tonight. Oh. And then set your alarm with your cell phone, with your, you know, you, etc. Yes. You can light as long as people are awake without a problem. So you walk in, by definition, you're awake. Well, you can't light in your sleep, so, yeah. They can say, together is good, separate is good, it's all good. Yes. It's a good question. By strict halacha, it makes absolutely no difference who lights. Same as when it comes to Ner Shabbos. If your husband asks you to light Ner Shabbos, what will you say? By show of hands, who'll say yes? Yeah? You're very, very unusual. I know the women that I know, they safeguarded that Ner Shabbos for themselves like nobody's business. So by the same token, generally speaking, the custom has been that the men, look, you have every single Shabbos, he only has 8 days a year. So don't complain. You have 52 plus, Yontif, so he only has eight. That's what I think is a traditional role. I just want to conclude, because my time is up, by just adding one nekuda. Why is there so much Mahadran by Chanukah? So much Mahadran, Mahadran, Mina Mahadran. Why is it so? So the answer, I believe, is given by my ancestor, the Pnei Yehoshua. The Pnei Yehoshua asks, why was it necessary to have a miracle that we have 8 days of oil, one day lasted 8 days, even if there was no pure oil, we'd have the ability to light impure oil. Yeah. It's called Tumah Dechuya B'tzibur. If there's no alternative, you can use impure objects for the temple service. So why was the miracle to take place? The answer is the miracle took place because had we used impure oil, it would have been a fulfillment of the mitzvah, but not in a beautiful fashion. It would have been impure and not mahadrin. Hashem made the whole miracle of having the one day last for eight in order to enable us to fulfill the mitzvah, the mahadrin. So we reciprocate by fulfilling the mitzvah of Chanukah, the mahadrin. We should hope and pray to quickly see the Beis HaMikdash, and we'll do the mitzvah, mahadrin, min ha-mahadrin, b'mher v'yemein amen.